Welcome to Women in WP,
a bi-monthly podcast about women who blog, design, develop, and more in the WordPress community.
Hi, Women in WP listeners. This is Angela with a quick message from our sponsor, WP Remote. WP Remote is a dedicated care plan platform that can help fuel your agency's growth with maintenance care plans for your clients' websites. WP Remote provides an automated workflow for you to manage multiple sites from a central dashboard with one-click updates, incremental backups, automated malware scans, firewall, uptime monitor, and more. WP Remote is created by the same great folks behind Blog Vault, Malcare, and Migrate Guru. Save time, increase your revenue, and make your clients happy by trying WP Remote for free today at wpremote.com/womeninwp. And now on with the show.
Hi, welcome to Women in WP. I'm Amy Masson.
And I'm Tracy Apps.
And our guest today is Megan Rose. Megan was introduced to coding by Neopets and is now a web developer in the Cleveland area who specializes in WordPress. Welcome, Megan.
Thanks for having me.
And we like to start off each show by asking our guests how they got started in WordPress. So kick us off by telling us your journey.
Yeah, so very early journey for HTML and CSS was Neopets. It was inline CSS, no style sheets. But I actually got started in WordPress at college. I studied visual communication technology at Bowling Green, and they had an interactive media course, and I specialized in it, and they taught us about like custom plugins and themes, and we kind of like managed little fake client websites and things like that.
So interactive, say media. That again? Interactive media. So what does a degree in interactive media entail?
So the program itself was kind of a variety. And then the idea was like to give you a generalized media degree, but then you select a specialty within. So it was actually print, web design, which they just called interactive media because of Flash and things like that, which I don't know, they just didn't consider the same thing. And photography and videography. And then they also had like marketing courses and things like that. So I opted to do like a marketing specialty along with interactive media. So yeah, it's not as heavy on the coding side. So it's like more of a design program, but like it's cool because people will go into the same program and kind of like branch out and take different paths afterwards.
That's pretty cool. I don't know what Neopets are. Can you please explain these? Because it sounds amazing. And I do remember the inline CSS, but what are these Neopets?
I could talk about this for forever. There are actually interesting studies on like the economy of Neopets, which is like ultra nerdy, but like not tech nerdy. So if you want to check that out, you can probably do that on your own time. But so Neopets are just like virtual pets, and virtual pets were like really, really hot when I was a kid. So there was like a whole bunch of Neopets knockoff stuff too. And they really like just marketed the heck out of like anything they could for Neopets. So like they had stuffed animals that you could buy and things like that, but you just like select a breed of these like alien looking pets and you take care of it online. And there's all this like depth to it. You can buy like a house for it. You can buy a pet for your pet, which is called a pet pet. I think at one point they had pet pet pets, but those didn't really like catch on. You can buy paintbrushes to like just change them like different colors. There's like a rainbow one and a starry one. And I don't know, like all sorts of stuff like that. Like I think there was one that was like a strawberry, but yeah. And so you just, you play these like mini games. They're basically like what we have as phone games now, like the block games and things like that. And you get coins and that's how you like buy stuff.
So where does the code come into this play here?
It's as nerdy as it gets. You get a web page for each of your pets that you can customize. And then I think they had pet pet pages too. So it's like really, like they really got in on their own ideas, a little heavy. But
did you have a pet page?
I remember having pet pages. I'm not sure about pets, but yeah, so you'd have, it was basically like, I don't know, it's, I guess if you pictured like a dating profile today, that was essentially what your pet page looked like, where it's like got a little picture of it, tells how old it is, the name, and like where they live, because you can pick like different cities that they live in this like map of Neopia, which is the name of the world.
This is amazing. Like, I mean, so I always get this, like, how many kids these days are, you know, growing up, they'll be like, oh, well, these games will, you know, this is a waste of time. But like, this is amazing. Like an introduction to basically your career, your life. And I did the same thing. I was like, I stayed up all night and I just made a really, really terrible website, you know, but like, that was the start of something. And I was like, it was slacking off, but when I did it, but then I learned all this stuff. So that's kind of really cool. And I really like the whole economy of it. And I see that like repeated in a lot of other games and stuff like it. It seems like a lot of like MySpace meets, I don't know, like all these other games, which are pretty cool. Was there also a communal, was there like a, could you like interact with other people too?
Yeah, it was, I'm trying to remember. I think it was a bit limited. Like it's nothing like today when you play a video game and you can just get on mic with them. But I know you could like battle your pets in what was called the Battle Dome. It's crazy how many terms I remember from this.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, so you could like see other people's houses and stuff like that, and it can be like customized to your own like style, and I don't know if you could like send direct messages or not, but it was probably like a limited form where it's like you could select from like some pre-written options or something like that. I don't remember it being too crazy. I think they did have a forum though, and so people probably met on Neopets like all the time, just like any other online platform. So
that's funny, because like that reminds me a lot of, as you're explaining it, Glitch. So the Slack, the company that made Slack, before that they were a game company, and they made this beautiful, you know, game like that, and you know, made your houses, and they could be like this, you can go visit people's houses. Like it actually developed quite a community. There's actually an ongoing group Facebook message of this group of people that I all met. We would all go to this one room and you would mine sparkly rock so that you could sell it and make money. And so that you could like buy things just in the game. But yeah, like that ended up becoming an interesting way of it developed community.
I'm just cracking up over here with the, I went into a room and mined sparkly glittery rocks.
Well, okay. So there's
like something I want to do today though, to be honest.
There is sparkly rock. You also, if you could, what did you, milked butterflies? You could get milk, you, yeah. And you nibble on a pig and you got meat. It was all crazy go nuts stuff, but yeah, sparkly.
Yep. Yeah. The games I played in my youth were quite different. So you learned CSS and HTML in the Neopets, and do you think that's what guided you into wanting to do this more professionally? Like when you went to college, like, because when I went to college, like WordPress wasn't a thing. The internet was barely a thing. So, you know, you went and you already had some basis. Do you think that helped you lead you to that path?
Yeah. So my dad was always into computers, and I think that was probably like the first thing that got me interested. Like we had an Atari and we used to play like Street Fighter and stuff like that on it. I mean, I'm still a gamer to this day.
We still have an Atari at our house, just FYI.
Nice.
I have one too, but it's at my parents' house.
I don't know if it works or not, but there is one in the basement in our house, as well as a Commodore 64.
Game night.
I also have one of those. Yeah. I used to do like ASCII art on my Commodore, which was really cool, but you can't do anything with it except like carry this big thing to like show it to people. And I'm sure my parents were like, what is wrong with this child?
My favorite Atari game was Pitfall, just for the record.
I love that one too.
It was the best one. Called Bye Bye Bear or something, and I just remember it made my brother really sad because you're like interacting with this bear in the game, like a teddy bear, and at the end he like grabs onto a balloon and flies away, and I remember he was so sad.
Oh my goodness.
Cry, like every time he played.
I remember actually I even before in the Atari I had a Texas Instrument something or another, and there was this one game that scared Jesus out of me. It was Hunt the Wumpus, and like you had to like, you know, like you would kind of like see like, oh, is it here, and like you didn't want to find it, and then all of a sudden you'd find it and it would be like blah. I was like, scarred me as a child.
It's like Minesweeper, just spookier.
Exactly, but with a giant monster, and then go to bed after that. Good luck.
Okay, so you were guiding us on your path from Atari and Neopets into, we got a little waylaid. This is not women in WP, it's women in gaming, in early gaming, which I think actually there's an audience. That's cool. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you were leading us from, you know, Neopets into college.
Yeah, so I think I just like generally had an interest in computers, but didn't connect that with like a career. Because my dad specifically worked like on phone systems, so it was not like I didn't have any like insight into like what it was like to be a programmer or anything like that. But my mom actually found the program when I was looking for colleges, and she like sent it to me, and I was like, oh yeah, this is it, this is what I want to do. And I don't even know if I applied to any other college. I was just like, yep, this is it. This is great. And I didn't really like look into it too much. This is a little crazy looking back on it, because that's not.
So what college is this? So we know what college offers this program?
BGSU.
Okay.
So yeah. And I think going into the program, I knew like, oh yeah, I'm gonna specialize in web for sure, because I didn't consider myself more on the like artistic side of like, you know, taking pictures and editing videos. I didn't really like see that as a route that I was interested in. I was more interested in like being in the design world, but more on the techie side of it, if that makes sense. So, and then like right after college, I did some internships in web design. And then right after college, I started at the place that I'm still at. So been there for a little over 6 years.
Wow, 6 years. Where are you at now?
KHM Travel Group. So they're a host travel agency, which just means they provide training to independent contractor travel agents that are like across the whole United States. So we have 4,500 travel agents that like work out of their home, and they run their own like small business, and then they just use us as a resource.
So you use WordPress for your job, correct? What extent do you do?
So I started as a front end developer, and then I actually like began working with someone who was doing like end user support. So it just naturally made sense. We, for whatever reason, the way we were structured at the time, we weren't within the same department. I was in the marketing department, but as I started to like work more with him, he would kind of tell me, hey, people are having problems with this, that, and the other, and I would be the one fixing them. So I would just naturally tell him when it was fixed so he could tell the end user. So we kind of formed our own team, which is now the technology team, and it's a team of 8. So that's grown over the years. So right now I'm in a management role, but I still contribute just with like theme and plugin development and like connecting APIs and things like that.
So I'm checking out the KHM Travel Group. So what's your role in like, I know you're working on the website, but like, are you developing the website? Or are you working with the agents? How does that work?
So I am the technology manager. So right now I actually manage the IT department and the web development department. We're kind of just all like mushed into one team right now because we've like branched off from the marketing team. And then just like became our own thing. So we have a user experience specialist who was previously the end user support. and two developers and an assistant, like a technology assistant, and then a couple of like IT professionals who actually work on the network side of things for our office. So I manage them and work on the sites just from like a bug fixing and like cross integrating basis. What's the word I'm looking for? Like connecting, you know, connecting all the pieces together and selecting like different like tools for the company. I provide like very limited like customer support, direct customer support, just when it gets like escalated to me.
Nice. So how did you find, because I know for me, it wasn't the same time when I was doing WordPress where I found the community, the greater WordPress community. How did you find that? Or was it around the same time? Or how did you stumble upon the WordPress world and WordCamps, et cetera?
So that was like, I don't know, it was like a little slow moving at first, but then all at once, which is probably how most people experience the community. So I didn't know it existed at all until I Googled WordPress conference. Because at the time my company didn't provide like any stipend for like professional development. So I wanted to change that. And when I searched WordPress conference, I found WordCamp Ann Arbor. And that was the next one that was coming up.
I literally Googled WordPress conference trying to find something that I could go to because I heard about other people going to conferences and I wanted to go to one too, but I only did WordPress. So I Googled WordPress conference and that's how I found WordCamp Las Vegas. Cause I also love Las Vegas.
And now it's just in the dashboard. It would have been so easy.
It wasn't in the dashboard when I went.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was the same Google search phrase.
Mm-hmm. So SEO people. No, this is so far of this group, 100% of the keyword searches is that. So then when you found the WordCamp Ann Arbor, did you attend? Because now you have also done some organizing as well, correct?
Yes. So I just attended Ann Arbor and I didn't make the most out of the experience looking back. I was one of those people that was like there with my notebook. And I was going to sit in those sessions if it killed me. And I was like, especially because I had that extra pressure of being the first person to like ask for, like I work in the travel industry, obviously. So if people go to like travel events, that's kind of assumed that it would be covered by the company. But I was the first person to be like asking to go to like something that isn't in the travel industry, which is our industry. So I felt like I kind of had something to prove by like bringing back notes and being like, these are the 700 like word notes that I took for each of the sessions. So I limited myself a little bit because I didn't go in with like the most open of minds about the conference experience in general. So I actually wasn't like gung-ho community until I went to Northeast Ohio the next year. And that I had skipped out on the after party at Ann Arbor too. And I feel like that kind of like affected how quickly I got into it. But I went to Northeast Ohio and because I didn't make any like meaningful connections or I didn't feel like I had made a lot of meaningful connections at Ann Arbor, I decided to volunteer for Northeast Ohio to like force myself to talk to people. And it worked out because the next WordCamp I went to after I spoke at, and then I believe I was on the organizing team the year after that. So it's a good move.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, the after party, it's a mixed bag because that's really where you go and you actually talk to people. Like, especially if you're new, you go to the conference and you sit in your sessions and you know, kind of by yourself. But then the after party is where you really start to get to know people. But then it's also, you know, a different experience where people are drinking and it's, you know, it's just if you're not comfortable with socializing in general, you're introverted, it's hard to break out of that. So do you have any tips for, you know, showing up at an after party by yourself?
Yes. So The showing up by yourself part is obviously like that's the hard part, but I guess going into it with the mindset of worst case scenario is no one talks to me and I talk to no one. Like having that be your mindset, I think, is helpful, because later when I started going to events in the travel side of things, I definitely felt like an outsider there. So I had to, I don't know if I was necessarily nervous for like after parties for word camps, because after like volunteering, that really like put me at ease, and I met some people that I knew like I could kind of like latch onto if I was like feeling uncomfortable at the after party. So that helped. But I definitely, when I went to stuff outside the WordPress space, conference wise, I didn't really have any life preservers there. So I just went with the attitude of literally the worst case scenario is I'm just uncomfortable, and I won't be hurt or anything. I'll just be uncomfortable for a couple hours.
And there's usually snacks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I latch onto. If I don't know anyone, I'm like, snack table.
And you could just like take pictures of the food and the decorations and stuff and look like you're doing something. Yes.
I'm tweeting. People maybe overestimate how, like you said, the worst thing is I'm going to be uncomfortable for a little while. And I think people build that up in their head as like the worst thing is I'm going to sit there and be by myself. And it's like, you know, how bad do you, you know, is it just hanging out with yourself?
Yeah. Especially if you've like already had lunches by yourself in your life. It's like, I lived through that one.
Yeah. So just our advice now to all the people going to your first WordCamp, and go to the after party and don't be afraid to go by yourself.
And hang out by the snack table, because I'll be there.
Yeah, go hang out with Tracy and have snacks. When we can actually have WordCamps again, which apparently is 2022.
That sounds about right.
So have we talked about on the podcast, have we done one since they made the official call to not have in-person events for all of 2021?
No, and I didn't even realize that that was an official statement. No,
that is an official. I'm not making that up, am I?
I think it's official.
Yeah,
I believe you, because I just haven't been on the internet.
Everything, all WordPress events, for at least through official ones, are online or virtual until 2022. What are your thoughts on
location? I think there's a couple countries that are doing pretty well COVID rates wise, and have successfully reopened but have their borders closed. So I think there's a couple like in other countries that are still happening.
It makes sense. I feel like that, you know, being overly cautious, because it is a worldwide community, especially for the larger ones, people will travel internationally, and that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. I think they're still doing some meetups too, because I saw some like chatter last week or the week before in the community team channel.
Okay, I thought I'd seen at least, you know, because I believe everything that I see on Twitter.
Everything on the internet is true.
Everything on the internet is true. That pretty much, you know, everything was officially canceled. But the meetups would be different, I think, than the official WordCamps. So, you know, obviously in the U.S., that's the right choice, because, you know, things are just, you know, a shit show here. But in terms of, you know, it's hard, you know, it's people that work from home. That's like your one social aspect to your job, and now it's just gone. And I know we've talked about it on other episodes, is I'm just not down for the virtual conference. I just haven't been able to really do that. But Megan, I know you've been involved at the virtual WordCamp Kent, right?
Yes. So let's see. I actually went to the first online one, which was San Antonio, and that was interesting. It feels like forever ago now. I like barely remember it, which probably is not a great testament to the hard work I know they put into it. So I'm sorry, but
really, how do days work right now? I don't even know what month it is. So yeah, I think that's,
I'm sure it was a great experience. I just don't remember it. But then I volunteered at Santa Clarita let's see, who was it? Someone in the community team had suggested, I think it was Cami Chaos had suggested that David was lead organizer for Kent for this year, and I was lead last year and year before. So it was a little bit of a bummer for him, because his very first one that he was leading was gonna be different, like 100% different, but it still turned out really well. We learned a lot from Santa Clarita that we were able to kind of absorb, and then we hosted like a little how to do online WordCamps meetup where we talked to other people that were considering doing online WordCamps. But the problem we were seeing is like there's obviously going to be a drop off because people are joining because of the novelty, not necessarily because that's the type of content they want to sit through and that's the format that they like. They're just doing it because it's this like new experience. So we had like over 1,000 people that were in at a given moment, which was pretty crazy, especially for our like small town WordCamp, which is usually like 110 people. So that part was like really exciting and cool, but we did kind of just take the in-person experience and like recreate it online, which is just not like, it's not the right way to go about it. It's better to rethink online entirely and do things in a different format and find different ways to engage with people than just having like a giant chat room with 1,000 people in it.
Yeah. What kind of tips would you do? Cause that is, yeah, that's overwhelming just thinking about it.
So like there were some aspects that I think we did pretty well. And Denver also did really well with theirs because they were shortly after us. And we also had Europe, obviously. The Europe, I just went to the contributor today though, because I was a little burnt out of online events by then, which like is the reason that we have to rethink it. But having breaks and having like much shorter days is obviously key because we're already like looking at the computer all day for work. Why would we want to go to an event either like at the end of our day or on our weekend and like stare at the screen again? So they've talked about doing like workshops, and they Make.WordPress actually launched like a new learning platform on the site, which I wasn't like involved in. So I don't know a ton of the details, but it's workshop-based learning for online. And I think another one of the good things that we had done was to use our Slack group a lot, which everyone complains about having another Slack group, but they really love it during events. It's very helpful. And we had a lot of interaction on ours, and we got a lot more people that joined it that weren't previously a part, that might have been like within our community or like right outside our community. So we actually saw a lot of numbers from like bordering states of people that attended, which was cool. So we still had like a local feel, and Denver actually did really well with their local feel because they contacted some like local musicians, and they had them play, they played their music video in the breaks, which was really cool. And they also reached out to like local coffee shops and got discount codes for people and gave that away as like their swag. So they did a ton. And even in the opening remarks, they like talked about different areas to visit, you know, when you're in the area. So that was really cool. And I think if we're doing like location-based online, that's really the way to do it. But we're kind of shifting towards not location-based if it's online, because it doesn't make sense to have it be location-based at that point.
Yeah, that's interesting, because you're right. Like one of the big things about WordCamps, the big mission is that it is supposed to be local, and like organizing it, you want to make sure you have a balance of like local speakers versus people who are, you know, coming in. Yeah, that's an interesting idea, because now with online, how do you do that? I know Minneapolis, this will air after this, but Minneapolis is and St. Paul is tomorrow. And when they asked for speakers, they were asking for local asterisks, like, or give or take, you know. So I applied, and I'm in Wisconsin, so I'm neighboring, so it was, you know, local enough. But yeah, I don't know what the solution to that is, or if it's better or worse or just different. I don't know.
Yeah, I hadn't really even considered that. You know, I keep seeing all the online camps that are happening, and they're all still the, you know, location based. I'm like, why aren't we still doing location based? Because we're all doing it from our houses.
Yeah. And like time zone based still makes sense, but location, like specific city, does not. And you could potentially get a lot more volunteers and get a lot bigger organizing teams and take the burden off of people if you're able to like organize based on something bigger, like a time zone.
So when you're organizing for online, and now that you've been involved in both, what do you think, what do you have to do differently to draw people in? Because you have the, you know, creeps like me that just won't show up online. So,
yeah.
How do you get me?
I feel like the people that do show up online are creeps too.
Some of them, for sure.
You know, we just got so many more interested people. We didn't really try. We were right at the cusp of, like, I mean, we were a month after the stay-at-home order in the area here. So, I mean, people just wanted, like, they were just, like, wanting to go to it. So there wasn't really a lot of, like, marketing we had to do. And actually, I think our SEO on our site was pretty rough at the time, because I remember we, like, had searched for it day of, and we're like, where is it? So I don't know what it was. I think it was probably a lot of like social media sharing, and then people just clicked a lot.
I can imagine, like, especially if it's right after, you know, like, you know, not, you were saying like the novelty of it, but even just like seeing people and, you know, like knowing that there's other people outside of your house. Like,
yeah, I think like there was a little bit of desperation like early on, and then the desperation kind of just comes in waves now, where we're like, no, we can get through this. And then it's like, I need to see people. So we're all kind of like going through that around the same times, I think. So people just really wanted to go. And what was a little bit different was our communications with the like sponsors and with the speakers, because specifically with sponsors, we had already published our levels. And I was the sponsor captain. And so we had to like go back and tell them, you're not getting that stuff, you're getting this other stuff. And not a ton of it had changed, because we didn't, I mean, it was just changing like table space to like virtual booth, which is that like not the best method of recreating, because you're just like mimicking instead of creating a totally different experience. Like one of the totally different experiences that I had thought of for sponsors was if you let them set up like one-on-one appointments. So if you let attendees like have a one-on-one like consultation with one of the sponsors, that might be like a more meaningful, it's only one person, but it might be like a more meaningful experience for the attendee and for the sponsor than just having them be in a booth and say like, oh, if you come in here, you might win $50. Like, just, you know, join from your bed, join from wherever, be wearing pajamas and like you've never even heard of my company before, but get in here and we'll raffle you off a Amazon card, whatever. Like, that, it's just, it's weird to just try to like recreate that, the in-person, because there's not the same like hype about it. And we can make like meaningful connections by doing things just totally differently. So I think it's worth looking into different ways.
That one-on-one thing is really great. And I like the concept behind it, because, you know, a lot of times I'm too nervous to go up to a booth and just start conversation. And when I do, it's usually because I want to yell at a web host about their platform. So, and yes, I have done that multiple times. But I think, you know, that's the only time I actually go is to say, hey, I love you, I hate you. And then anything in between is I just don't go up to the booth.
Yeah, that was something. I was on the organizing team for WordCamp US, which was obviously canceled. And that was also a little bit of a bummer, because I was like, oh my gosh, I'm on the US team. Like, that's really exciting. And then it didn't happen. But it was still a cool experience to like see the differences in the organizing teams, because it's so much bigger. And that naturally makes it a little more slow moving. Plus, we had this like so much like back and forth where we're like, oh, we're gonna pivot, oh no, we're gonna do this, we're gonna, like, there was a period of time where we're like thinking of, you know, doing like having a plan for in-person and online, like real early on. So that was like totally different to see it from that side of things, but we talked a lot about sponsors with that group, and what came out of it was like just really good conversations about how to do things that are better for sponsors, and how we kind of we all agreed that like you go to a sponsor booth because you either already know about them or because you're happy with them or because you're mad at them.
Or you want a free pair of socks or pens
like
or something.
You go to them for the swag. So like in person, you would go for the swag, or you get that aspect where you're walking down the hall, you're trying to get to that sponsor over there or that speaker that just left a room, and you're like walking down the hall and some friendly sponsor is like, hey, how are you liking the event? It's just like the generic thing that happens when you're in the sponsor area. So obviously that like disruption of your day can't happen online. Like we're not going to have sponsor pop-ups where like, oh, it flashes on your screen like, hey, how are you doing? Like those chatbots that are on sites, you know, hey, this is GoDaddy. We just want to see how you're liking this online event. So you just can't recreate some of those in-person interactions. So doing them on like a one-on-one basis, I feel like would be more beneficial, because then it's going to be people that are like proactively saying, yeah, I want to talk to GoDaddy or Bluehost, and going in there, and I don't know if they're yelling at them, they're yelling at them, but hopefully not.
I didn't actually yell. I had words. Anyway, so right now I think we're facing this thing called Zoom fatigue, where, you know, people just don't want to do the online stuff. And, you know, when people start talking about it, I'm like, I've been using Zoom every day of my life for years. So this was not a thing I was familiar with. But when everything started happening, I had a little happy hour for my neighbors on Zoom. And then the second time I tried to schedule it, nobody wanted a part of it. They were just like, nope, I don't want to do it. And I haven't been able to schedule, like we did some family things and nobody wants to do it anymore.
Yeah, my D&D group, Dungeons and Dragons.
I knew that.
I don't know what their interests are. Dungeons and Dragons group. We switched to online, and that was a bit interesting because then we're doing like Discord, and we're not like we're doing dice bots instead of like rolling actual dice, which is a little weird. Not the same like feel. But of course, like we would normally get together and like, you know, try each other's beers and like have a potluck and like all these like non-D&D D&D activities.
Yeah, there's no beer sharing right now. Nope. Mm-hmm. There's no beer sharing right now.
No, it's not happening. And we'd all be like crammed around a little table, you know, to have our miniatures on the board. So that's been very different. But I actually saw an interesting, I think it was Corey Miller that had tweeted it, but he tweeted about Zoom fatigue and that Zoom fatigue is just meeting fatigue. I hope it was him that tweeted it, because now I'm quoting him. But it was a tweet that said, Zoom fatigue is not a thing, it's meeting fatigue. And I replied to it with some of my thoughts, which were, well, there's a little difference in like that, the surveillance state of having the camera in front of you. So there's like your self-policing. So like, you know, I fixed my shirt like 16 times already. It's because normally in a room, you're in with like a bunch of people, and people aren't, you don't feel like people are fixated on like just looking at you. So
and you don't see your reflection.
Yourself. Yeah. Seeing yourself is really uncomfortable. and you know, if you get echo or something, like hearing yourself too, and then having to like ignore it, that's also like uncomfortable. And the other aspect is like the blue light in your screen, it's not good for your eyes. So I think there is like Zoom fatigue is real. I do believe it's a thing, but I think we also have meeting fatigue because there's still too many meetings in all of our companies. So I think we have both.
I agree. I totally agree. Yeah. Cause I feel tired, but I also then enjoy that because I do like to see people's faces. And I think the good point of, well, there's so many other things that in an in-person meeting or an in-person event that aren't related to the meeting or event that we're missing. And I think those things give, you know, a little more energy or life to a meeting versus, like you said, looking at a camera.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's good meetings and bad meetings. There's like, obviously the meetings that I find most important are like one-on-ones with my team members. Those are like, I try to like not ever cancel them or like move them around. I'm frequently late to them, but that's just because I'm just always late to them. But those are like way more meaningful than update meetings. So there's just times that it's going to be more draining emotionally, and potentially you're thinking like, oh, I've been on video all day, and like, I just want to have my video off. So I'm in lots of meetings where half of the people have their camera on and some of them have it off, and or people will turn it off partway. I think we just need to be accepting of when people are like, have had enough and just need to turn their video off, or like walk away or do things like that.
Yeah, I try. I'd have always, this is before pre-pandemic too, I always made a point to try and have my video on just because I like to see other people's faces. So, you know, even if I am reading something in the background and they can't tell, it looks like I'm very intent and studying the camera, at least, you know, my face is there. But I mean, I go to meetings now and like half the people will have their cameras off. And I think that's just where we are right now.
Yeah. And it probably depends on the subject matter too, because there are sometimes I'm in a meeting and someone has their camera off and I'm like, oh, I wonder, I don't really want to see their face right now. I want to see their reaction to this. Like, so I think sometimes people use it strategically, like, you know, they'll have their camera off because they have strong feelings on a subject, but they don't want to like give it away. So I think it's good to like default to on, but just still like allow people to turn it off because they've maybe been in like three meetings beforehand.
Yeah. Well, it's been really great having you on the show today. Before we go, can you tell everybody where they can find you online?
Yes. So my site is megabyterose.com. I haven't posted recently. I was on a really good streak for a while. But, and you can find me on Twitter at megabyterose and in the WordPress Slack. And yeah, that's basically everywhere where I would be.
Awesome. Well, thanks awesome. For being Thank on you. Today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's fun.
Thanks for listening. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter or join our Facebook group. We would be honored if you subscribe to the show. You can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and iTunes. Finally, if you want to be on the show or know someone who would, visit our website at womeninwp.com. Until next time.